Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. 1 year ago yesterday, 49 people were killed, 58 others wounded at a gay Orlando nightclub, Pulse, in what's called a terrorist attack and a hate crime. It was both the deadliest mass shooting by a single shooter and the deadliest incident of violence against LGBT people in U.S. history, also the deadliest terrorist attack in the U.S. since 9/11. Shortly after the killer began, the shooter swore allegiance to the Islamic State. An investigation found no evidence of communication between the shooter and ISIS. Yesterday, on the first anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting, Americans were asked to join in acts of love and kindness to honor victims of this three-hour rampage a year ago, including survivors still reeling from emotional and physical wounds. This half hour, we want to get the thoughts of two Iowans. Daniel Hoffman Zinnel is with us, executive director of One Iowa in our Des Moines studio. Hello, Daniel.
Hello. Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm fine. Brian Bruning is with us, author of an article published a year ago today by the Des Moines Register titled, I'm Gay and Married to a Muslim, and Today I Am Not Okay. Brian, welcome back to our program.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Fine. Let's think back a year. In fact, let's listen back a year, Brian, when you were on this program a year ago after that article was published. Let's listen to an excerpt from you reading from your article a year ago.
Though 1,500 miles away, the massacre of LGBT people in Orlando has shaken me, and it's not okay. It's not okay that my community was singled out and attacked. It's not okay that this kind of terror could happen during LGBT Pride Month. It's not okay that violence against queer people is frequent and often unremarked upon by the media. It's not okay that this kind of terror could happen during Ramadan, a month of fasting, introspection, and peace. It's not okay that there are people who hate my husband because he is a Muslim and from Algeria. It's not okay that there are people who hate me and my husband because we are two men. It's not okay that these previous two groups are not mutually exclusive. It's not okay that I feel like the target on my back just got bigger today.
Brian Bruning, reading on this program just a year ago. Brian, now today, a year later, how are you doing?
Oh, doing fine. I mean, it's hard to. I mean, even just hearing that, like, it brings back a lot of those emotions I was feeling on that day, and it just really brings into perspective what a year it's been since it last happened. I mean, it feels like we're in a different world in a lot of ways. Just what has happened. And socially in the country in the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm. We want to talk about that a little bit more, but I wonder, how did you and your husband, did you mark the anniversary of this tragedy in any specific way, remember it in any certain way yesterday?
We actually had, of all things, I mean, it's always been important for me in times of stress to be around family, so we had a nice family dinner. Frederick's mother is actually visiting from Algeria, so we had a traditional Algerian meal, and we just kind of spent time with family, and I guess a lot of it was just remembering the things like this happened, and it's important to not forget them.
Mm-hmm. Can you say, Brian, how the mass shooting changed you, changed the gay community that you have contact with? Can you characterize that in any way?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, at least from my perspective, so there has been a lot of victories for the LGBT community in the last 10 years. I mean, obviously marriage is the most prominent of them, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I think because of all the victories, it kind of created a sense of perpetual wins. Mm-hmm. I think for a lot in the gay community, and I think the Pulse incidents in particular really highlighted the fact that there's still a long ways to go. That, you know, LGBT
people are still targets, are still, you know, our position in society is only as safe as, you know, we're willing to fight for. And so I think it woke up a lot of people, and it got a lot of people aware that there's still a lot of fight left to happen.
Daniel Hoffman Zinnel, a new executive director of One Iowa. You've been leading Iowa's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning organization, One Iowa, since January, I understand. How do you remember getting the news of the Orlando nightclub shooting?
Well, it was actually the day of the Capital City Pride Parade in Des Moines. So I remember waking up and hearing the news. And at that point, we really didn't have a lot of information at the time. And so I remember being feeling disbelief and shock, and kind of thinking back, that really could have been the Garden or the Saddle, and what that would have felt like. Mm-hmm. To have it,
establishments in Des Moines that are well known, yes, to gays and lesbians, right?
Absolutely. And then the next feeling was, do we even go to the parade? And of course we had to. We had to stand strong with our entire LGBTQ community and really represent what Pride Month is all about. And that's about living out, living authentically, and being proud of who we are, but also remembering where we come from and recognizing that after we did find out more information, it was also Latin night. And so many of the individuals, not only were they LGBTQ, but also people of color. And it's really important for us to remember those individuals' legacy, but also remember things like the New Orleans Upstairs Lounge massacre that killed 32 folks from a fire that really didn't get brought up until Pulse, because back then there were three individuals that weren't even accounted for because their family was so ashamed that their family member would be in such establishment.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about what you just mentioned. How are white gay men treated differently than Latinos who are gay, or Muslim gay men?
Yeah, it's something that we are increasing our dialogue and conversations around, which I'm really excited about, because I myself, as a white, cisgender, gay man, have a lot of privilege within my life and have a lot of experiences where other folks that don't have that privilege face additional marginalization and oppression because of their religion, because of their race or ethnicity, because of their socioeconomic status, their abilities, their gender. They experience different experiences than I do as a privileged white cisgender gay man.
Mm-hmm. And Brian Bruning, your husband Frederic is a Muslim, an Algerian by birth, now firmly at home here in Iowa, in Elkader, in the town in Iowa, the only town named after, correct me here, it's an Algerian general, the only sort of Arabic origin named Iowa town. Okay, I got that right. But so your husband is one of these sort of minorities that experiences of being a gay man differently.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's a little bit his experience is a little bit different because he doesn't have there isn't a community in Al-Qaeda because we're so small. He is literally the only Muslim guy here, and so it's, I think, because of that, he's a little bit singled out. It's hard to make generalizations about one person.
Yes.
So, but I think in general, you know, growing up obviously in Algeria was a very different situation, and I don't want to tell his story. But I think coming to the United States offered him a lot of opportunity to be himself, mm-hmm, and to you know, get married in a lot of ways. I mean, it just wasn't a possibility for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think so that the United States afforded that benefit. And I mean, I can't think of anyone else really who's such a vocal supporter of the United States and what it stands for, because it means so much more to him because he was able to come to it and get that freedom in a real visceral sense that when you're born here, you kind of take it for granted. I think in some senses, he faces more suspicion maybe is the word, more from the Muslim side of things than from the from being a gay man. So.
Brian, I wanted to read a little more from the article that you wrote last year, very quickly after the nightclub shooting, because it pertains to what you're just mentioning there, your husband being a Muslim here in Iowa, living in Elkader. This is what you wrote, and I'd like to have you explain it a little bit after I read it. You wrote, "It's not okay that even though I defend Muslims because it is the right thing to do, the majority of Muslims would not defend me because they think that who I am is immoral and wrong. It's not okay that one of the underlying missions of my restaurant, to promote intercultural understanding of Islam in Algeria, is called into question when there are Islamic leaders and people and countries who think I should be put to death for being gay." Talk about that.
Well, that's always the that's a paradox in a lot of ways that I think about a lot. You know, it's pretty well documented in various countries throughout the Muslim world that it's almost certain death if you are caught in or accused of being gay. Iran, ISIS, all these things, and so those kind of situations happen because they're allowed to happen, because there's a general the population in general is okay with it happening. But that doesn't, I think, in my way, absolve me from still trying to defend the religious freedom of others. I guess what I think, the way I look at it is, it's important for us to stand together, even if we don't agree, but to stand together in that everybody should have the right to be who they are and believe what they want to believe, as long as it doesn't afflict upon others. And so, even though those things happen in other countries, I think it's still important to stand up for the rights of you know, Muslims, especially in this country. And you know, that being said, like, we have made friends once we came to Iowa. We made friends with the people in the Muslim community, especially in Cedar Rapids, which is, you know, an hour and a half away from here. And they have been very open and very, I don't know if necessarily accepting, but they've been very kind and very nice. And I think that when you are a small community in a state, it's easier to build bridges because there's not a lot of you. So I think about the terms of the fact, and in Cedar Rapids, a lot of the Muslims are from like Bosnia, but there's mm-hmm. also some from Lebanon, and those geographic connections, which mean a lot in their countries, mean very little here. And I think it's a similar condition where we're kind of all in the same boat. So.
Brian Bruning is with us. If you've just joined us, he's the author of an article that was published a year ago today titled, "I'm Gay and Married to a Muslim, and Today I'm Not Okay." He lives with his husband in Elkader, Iowa. Daniel Hoffman Zinnel is with us, the new executive director of One Iowa. Wanted to move on and talk about a couple of other things here. Donald Trump inaugurated in January of this year, so we've had, I think, four and a half, close to 5 months under Donald Trump's presidency. I'd like to have you listen to some words of Donald Trump from his Republican convention speech talking about projecting the LGBTQ community from violence. Let's listen to this short clip.
As your president, I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens from the violence and oppression of a hateful foreign ideology. Believe me.
Daniel Hoffman Zinnel, tell me what you think of those words now after almost a half year under President Trump.
Sure. So
those promises.
Yes, big promises. This month, June, is LGBTQ Pride Month. And over the last 8 years, the White House has released a proclamation celebrating LGBTQ Pride Month, and we have yet to hear that this current year. And so I think that really sets a tone and sets a message. LGBTQ Proclamation Pride Month really provided some affirmation for the entire community, from our commander-in-chief at the highest level here in the United States. And so I think it's really sets a tone, sets a message without that proclamation for the entire LGBTQ community. And even the rescinding of the Title IX for transgender students in schools also set a message that there are potentially parts of the community that he is not interested in protecting, and that was specifically trans youth in schools. Although in Iowa, we do have, as part of our civil rights code, protections for gender identity and sexual orientation. It shouldn't necessarily impact Iowa, but it definitely set a tone and set the standard for where the White House is headed for LGBTQ inclusion.
Brian Bruning, do you see it the same way? What would you like to add there?
Well, I guess, you know, in the end, it's prove it. You say you're going to do all these things, and he's done nothing to actually demonstrate it. I mean, in the end, talk is cheap. You know, there was it's funny, like, there's a lot of, I think, friendly criticism of Obama over his terms that he wasn't doing enough at times, but he actually did things. He talked the talk and walked the walk. Now, if you know, Trump is able to demonstrate a similar things, I think it's a different thing, but he's only making statements and he's not doing anything. And then if anything, he's making it worse. I mean, you can't, the fact that one of the first things he did was take away protections for transgender students who are kids is really telling to me.
Mm-hmm. Let me talk to you, Daniel, specifically before we have to say goodbye about the One Iowa agenda, the vision, I guess. You are the new executive director of One Iowa since January. Mm-hmm. Now that marriage equality is the law of the land in all 50 states, has been for some time, what are your goals at One Iowa?
Yeah, so I think since the election, there were a lot of realizations that many within the community felt a little like we were too complacent. And so we are seeing more and more folks wanting to be engaged and involved in our work, which is really exciting. And hearing many horrific stories still today, I've heard recently a transgender person that fears for their life and will not ride public transportation because they fear for their life. We've heard from a gay, older person in rural Iowa who is fearing for their life because they're in a nursing home and fears that they are going to be outed and treated differently during one of the most vulnerable times in their life. So there's still important work for us to do, and we're really hoping to ramp up and engage folks surrounding advocacy and really advancing our cause to not only protect the rights and legal protections we have in the state of Iowa, which are really great, but also add to and enhance. So some of those include adding to the hate crime gender identity. So in the state of Iowa, transgender folks can be specifically targeted without that individual being charged for a hate crime. Another area that we're hoping to see is banning conversion therapy for minors. So parents still in the state of Iowa can force their child to go through shock therapy and conversion therapy, which medical practices across the country have said that it is barbaric, really. So we're really hoping to engage folks and get ready for the next legislative session through our advocacy and grassroots movement. But I'm excited about a couple other areas that we're adding to our repertoire. And one of those is an LGBTQ workplace culture summit. So if you think about it, we spend more time with our colleagues and coworkers at work. And so we want to help employers create safe and welcoming environments for their LGBTQ employees, because we know when we're out and we're able to live authentically, we're going to be more productive in the workplace, we're going to have increased job satisfaction, and you're going to retain those employees and potentially recruit new ones. So
what is that, Daniel? What would be an example? What would of living authentically, a workplace issue that somebody who is straight may not even realize is happening, but is very apparent to a lesbian, gay, or bisexual, transgender person that may happen in a workplace?
Yeah, there's still a high percentage of folks that aren't out in the workplace or aren't out to everybody in the workplace. And so if you think about it, we go through these exercises when we do trainings. We have folks have a conversation with a partner and talk about what they did over the weekend, but they can't name their significant other. They can't talk about their family. And so that is what it's like for some folks to be in the workplace, not able to live out and authentically.
Mm-hmm. How do you change that? We don't have much time, but I'm just interested.
We start with leadership and work with employers to develop specific strategies, create LGBTQ work groups within those entities to really advance policies and work on that environment so folks can feel authentic and happy in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. I understand also One Iowa wants to create an LGBTQ leadership institute. What's that? Why is that needed? What's that about?
I'm excited to help build up our bench strength of future LGBTQ leaders. We have some amazing trailblazers like Sharon Malero and Senator Matt McCoy, but we can't give the burden to them always. We need to be able to pass the baton at some point. And so this Leadership Institute is really going to help empower, engage our LGBTQ leaders to develop specific skills, but also be engaged and become a positive representation out in the community so that we have more and more leaders that we can go to in the future.
Mm-hmm. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to talk about health care, this new stopgap measure to try and stop Iowa's individual insurance market from collapsing. I wonder, Daniel, if you are thinking about how the insurance conversation is going to affect your community specifically. There was a nice article this weekend in the New York Times Magazine about how changes to the expansion in Medicaid, for instance, could really negatively affect LGBT men who are HIV positive.
Absolutely. We're continually monitoring the health insurance side of things, and we'll be hopefully engaging in conversations to be able to have those specific things included, incorporated in future plans.
Mm-hmm. You talked about engagement here, and perhaps, Brian, you can get in here, too, in the end. We have just about a minute or so left. Engagement also from the straight community. What specifically? What would be at the top of that list that you can leave us with to think about in changing our culture?
All of us can be better allies, and I look at allyship as a verb, not a noun, and so we need to stand together, educate ourselves, not put the burden on the marginalized and oppressed group to educate us on their specific experiences and really advocate alongside them. And I think allyship is needed more and more now than ever.
Mm-hmm. Brian Bruning, a few parting words?
I would say, you know, the number one thing I think if straight allies could do is speak up, you know. I think like a lot of the people that I work with, a lot of my employees are kids in high school, and I think about how challenging it was in high school and how it would have been a lifesaver for me if more people would have spoken up when things were happening. And so if you see something, speak up. It will make a difference like you would not believe the life of an LGBT person.
Okay, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us again, Brian Bruning of Elkader and Daniel Hoffman Zinnel, Executive Director of One Iowa. We appreciate your time. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up after a short break, a look at the stopgap plan to prop up Iowa's health insurance market. Dr. Peter Damiano will be with us. And also a new macaque at the Blank Park Zoo. We'll hear about the snow monkey.